And welcome back to the Sundance Reel. I'm Leslie Thatcher along with Jill Orschel and introducing you to the directors and producers of the film The Case Against Eight. Again, one of those in the U.S. documentary competition. I have Ben Cotner and Ryan White in the studio with us. Good morning.
Thanks for having us, Leslie.
Thank you.
So, in 2010, Sundance programmed the film Eight, The Mormon Proposition. It was an indictment of the Mormon Church's involvement in the promotion and eventual passage of California's Prop 8. Your film now then follows the legal challenge to that once the proposition was...
Kind of picks up where that film left off. So our film begins with the passage of Proposition 8 and then follows the two plaintiffs that sued the government of California in the federal courts and then the two all-star lawyers who were the opposing attorneys during Bush v. Gore and everyone thought to be enemies in the courtroom, and they actually joined forces for this case, Ted Olson and David Boies.
And I love those guys only because it was like they became kind of a third couple in the whole screening.
Well, it's great for us. We were just talking about how, you know, the couples are billed as ordinary people, but we find them far from ordinary. And the lawyers are billed as these superstars, larger than life. But they're great ordinary people, too. And it's really great that we were able to share the personal side of their lives as well.
Yeah. Well, tell us a little bit more about Ted, because there were some great scenes in the film talking about, it's like, are we on the right side? If Ted's on our side? Yeah.
Yeah, people were very wary of Ted Olson taking on LGBT rights. He was Bush's solicitor general. He won Bush v. Gore. I think he's one of the winningest lawyers ever in front of the Supreme Court, and almost all of those are extremely conservative cases. So LGBT leaders, understandably, probably were very wary when he joined the case. On the flip side, conservatives were also very wary of why he was doing this. And so it was kind of one of those situations where everyone was unhappy except for the lawsuit. And so there was a lot of hearts and minds that had to be changed over the course of the last 5 years. You know, I don't want to ruin the ending, but Ted Olson is the best arguer in front of the Supreme Court. So I think in the end, everyone's on board that he might have been the best attorney to do this. So, but it took a long time for people to come around.
Yeah. And I heard a couple of references to this being called a love story. And I think I would agree with that, especially because of just the last few minutes of the film where you show a couple of wedding scenes. And it was just so touching.
Thank you. You know, that was really important for us to we had this framework of this great legal argument, but we wanted to show the human side of it. And Paul and Jeff and Chris and Sandy are the two couples that are in the film. And I think after you see everything that they've gone through to get to that wedding, it really is an emotional payoff because you just you see the hardship that they've gone through. And to see that love manifested in the ceremonies in the end was something for us. We were so excited to be there, and we're so excited to have it in the film.
Well, they talk about just the vetting process to get these four plaintiffs. I mean, yeah, wouldn't every filmmaker love to have that vetting process take place?
Well, I thought it was amazing. There was no cameras allowed in the actual courtroom, so you guys decided to follow the team of lawyers and the plaintiffs practicing. I thought that was such a great idea, and it helped have this building effect of like, okay, almost like a team getting ready for the big game.
Yeah, originally there were supposed to be cameras in the courtroom, and the Supreme Court ended up blocking that the very last second. And so the moment that happened, Ben and I were making a movie regardless, but the moment that happened, we felt an increased motivation and almost a burden that our film was now going to be the only way that the American public would have access to this trial. So we really tried hard in the editing room with our amazing editor, Kate Amend, to make people feel as if they were in that courtroom with you since they didn't get to see footage of it. And so if you see our film, you'll see that the plaintiff testimonies, which were probably the most emotional part of the trial itself, when all four plaintiffs had to go on their stand and put their life in the court system and tell their stories, we try to make the audience feel as if they're in there, and hopefully we succeeded in that.
Yeah. Well, I thought it was a great way to structure the film.
Thanks.
Yeah, you still, we do see scenes of the other side, I will, but you really didn't show a lot of that. How come?
Sure. We, our initial access to this case was through the American Foundation for Equal Rights, which is the organization that started the lawsuit. And we really started following them, and we wanted this to be a character piece of their journey and the process of taking a case to the Supreme Court. Our movie, we didn't want to be about gay marriage. We didn't want it to be about whether gay marriage is right or wrong. We wanted it to be about their these characters and their journey. And we had never seen a film that followed a case to the Supreme Court. So we thought that would be a really interesting window into the American judicial system.
Yeah. But why not show more of, you know, the attorney
sure.
Cooper and,
sure.
and his case?
Yeah.
And I think, as you explained last night, that it was you really then risk the you know, the trust that you had built up with the plaintiffs.
And exactly. I think it really would have compromised our access to the side that we were following. As well as, you know, ethically, it would be a little bit questionable if we were inside two confidential teams mm-hmm. at the same time. So even if they had allowed us to follow them, which I'm not sure they would have, I don't think that was our goal.
It was an evidence-based trial. It was a total curveball that this case was thrown into trial, right? And so both sides had to bring in expert witnesses. They had to have a testimony. The other side, the Yes on 8 campaign, only brought in two expert witnesses. One of them testified on more of a technicality than their main witness was David Blankenhorn, and he actually is in our film. So if you're looking at it from an evidence standpoint, you know, we have a main interview. He's a main character in our film, basically their prime expert, and we're so glad that he was willing to participate with us and be in the film.
And it was also really important to us not to demonize the other side. This really wasn't about saying they're bad people. They had an amazingly talented team of lawyers working on their case as well. So I for one, would love to see a film about their side. So, you know, I'm not sure if anybody was filming it, but that would be a really cool movie to see.
Yeah, so it was like five years in the process. I think you said you had some 600 hours of footage.
Yes.
So were you there, like, then for every meeting? I mean, or did you miss key discovery or something, do you know? I mean, at those meetings, and just think, oh, we've been to every other one but this one?
I can't think of one moment where we weren't there. I mean, we were very good at covering for each other. We also had a third camera person. We never had cinematographers or sound people because it was so sensitive that Ben and I and Rebecca, our other camera person, got access. And they knew our faces. Then they started to get to know us. And so we were allowed into all of these things that, you know, a random cinematographer or sound man would not have been allowed to. So the three of us tried really hard to cover for each other. And, you know, at the drop of a dime, you had to be in a random city, you know, fly to D.C., fly to San Francisco, because the court system is so unpredictable. You don't know when anything's going to happen. But I can't think of one moment that I'm disappointed that we didn't get.
There were a few times where there were some, court-protected documents that we wouldn't be allowed in the room while they were discussing those. And the lawyers were very sensitive about those court orders. But those wouldn't have been the exciting meetings, I don't think, anyway. So these, moot courts where Ted Olson would practice his arguments, which I think every lawyer dreams of watching Ted Olson doing this practice, that was really an honor for him to allow us to film those scenes.
And one of the plaintiffs described you as just two more kids. We've got enough around here already. Did you feel like that?
We do. Yeah, they call us their fifth and sixth son. They have four. So, I mean, that's part of the fun of documentary filmmaking, is getting close with people like that and winning over their trust and telling their story in a way that they're happy with now. And Chris and Sandy are like our moms, you know, and we're just so proud that they're proud of the film to share with their boys and hopefully their grandkids one day.
Yeah. And in the meantime, you had lives to live and jobs to go to. And I think somebody finished a couple of films in the meantime, too.
Yeah. Ryan? I mean, yeah, I'm a documentary filmmaker. So it's been 5 years, and it's difficult when you're a documentary filmmaker and trying to pay the bills to know that you might not have a film coming out for 5 or 6 years. So I made two other films while we were doing this. And Ben had a very demanding full time job as an acquisitions executive. And so it was a balance of trying to keep our other work lives and also always be available, because I think at the end of the day, this was our baby, both of ours. And so we were willing to sacrifice whatever it took to film events for this film or finish this film.
Yeah. Did you learn anything particular about our justice system?
Absolutely. We joke that we all got honorary law degrees after spending 5 years
for
with
better
these
or
guys,
worse.
For better or for worse. And we learned a lot about the law. We learned a lot about, you know, the institution of marriage. I think when we're lucky enough to be in the courtroom every day and watch the witnesses, the expert witnesses, and the plaintiffs' testimonies. And I think we learned a lot about ourselves. And what it means to be married and to be in love. I think that's something that the film really addresses, and we were excited to learn about that.
So we see this happening now in Utah. Is this going to be a similar process then for every state that has basically banned same-sex marriage?
It could be. I mean, it's unknown right now, but it's if you think about the timeline, right? The case that we followed was filed in May of 2009. Chris and Sandy and Paul and Jeff won in trial in August 2010. They didn't get married until June 2013. So they were put through this 5-year process of limbo. Utah couples are going through the exact same thing right now. Exactly. Not to mention the states where it's never even been legalized, even for a couple week window. And so that to me is something that I hope people take away from our film, whatever side you're on, to watch these people's stories and ask if that's right to put these people in limbo, to put their families in limbo. I mean, people pass away unmarried, you know, people's parents pass away and never see them get married. And we have who knows how many couples nationwide who are going through that. And so I hope people at least ask that, whether that's right, that we put these people through this process.
Yeah. And there are currently over 30 cases that have been filed in different states challenging bans on same-sex marriage. So
Based on the
DOMA and the Perry decision. So they really did give birth to this whole crop of new cases, which one or many of them will eventually make it to the Supreme Court. So we hope that people will have a chance to see this film as a part of that conversation so that they can understand some of the things that went into it.
Yeah, it was a real education for me watching it. I'd love to see Utah audiences see it and across the United States.
And I think that that's what it came down to, was kind of this essence of who's harmed here, right? I mean, where we have same-sex marriages, those who don't agree with it can't prove any, you know, that they're being harmed by any of that by that decision. And I think the film touches on that.
It's a big moment in our film, actually, because before the trial started, Judge Walker had a preliminary hearing, and he asked the head lawyer for the other side, the Yes on 8 side, what harm would be done. And his answer was, I don't know. And it became this huge blow-up moment that I think he regrets greatly, because the press picked up on it. You know, the Ted and David picked up on it. And it's been repeated over and over. But that was the answer in the courtroom, and I don't know if any evidence has ever been brought in that shows who's harmed.
And that's when basically the Supreme Court's ruling that there is no legal standing because there's no
exactly
harm
because
done?
Because the governor and the attorney general weren't willing to defend the law. This group of people who were the proponents of Proposition, and they actually put it on the ballot. They stepped in to defend the law. And so there was a lot of question of whether they actually had standing because they weren't officially representing the state of California. And on top of that, they couldn't prove any tangible harms. So the Supreme Court ultimately found that there were no harms to these people, and therefore they didn't have the standing to be there at the Supreme Court.
So HBO's got the film already. Yeah.
HBO's got it.
Mm-hmm. That great. So,
so
you had sold it before you even got here then, huh?
We did. We made the film for 4 years on our own. You know, like as a filmmaker, it's a dream to get into Sundance, and it's a dream to work with Sheila Evans and HBO, and we pulled off both those things at this film, so we're so thrilled. HBO will be airing it in June, which is obviously completely exciting. They're putting a lot of resources into it. We're very lucky. And so they're very engaged in also getting this out to the country, starting a dialogue, and so we're so excited to partner with them.
And you're thinking, what, in 5 years that this is going to be history, this whole issue of...
Well, Chad Griffin at the HRC, shortly after the Supreme Court's decision, made the goal of 50 states in 5 years. And at the rate that it's been going in the last year, it seems like that might be an achievable goal, if not even sooner. So I think that's an exciting time.
Well, the case against 8, I've got... Director and producers Ben Cotter and Ryan White. It's part of the U.S. documentary competition. Thanks for stopping by this morning.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
It's 9:36.
This is Reese DeMille with Republic Services, your local recycling and garbage services provider and a proud sponsor of KPCW. Summit County residents are recycling more and more, currently nearly 6 million pounds per year. Recycling helps keep Summit County clean. SummitCountyRecycles.org.